In the book of Ephesians, it was written by Paul. He was to encourage and exhort the church at Ephesus. The letter that he wrote makes two separate presentations of this theme. And the first is the mystery of salvation and the church, and it covers chapters 1, 2, and 3. And the second part of it is the exhortation, the encouragement, and exhorting the people at Ephesus. And that's, you know, and that's in chapter 4, you know, 4 through 6. And when you come to chapter 6, it talks about after he's exhorting the congregation, the people, and he's telling them what they, trying to encourage them and everything. And one of the things he brings to them to encourage them is he talks about the armor of God. And I know most of us have heard sermons and sermonettes and so forth about the armor of God, what it is and so forth. And I'd like to not so much go through this again, but in chapter 6, verse 10, he says, "Finally, grow strong in the Lord with the strength of his power. Put on the full armor of God so as to be able to resist the devil's tactics." And this is from the translation of the New Jerusalem Bible. And it goes on through, and in the next few verses it talks about this armor. And he uses this armor as the description of this armor. It's something that they're familiar with in their day, the Roman soldiers, the armor that they wore. And he goes through and he describes it and how they can, effectively use this to help them in their spiritual growth and their spiritual life. And it goes through and it talks about, the helmet of salvation, the belt, and the shoes and so forth. And it goes through all this, but there's one element that's not specifically mentioned here. And without this element, all the armor may not, having all that armor and using it may not offer the protection that you would hope for. It's just one element. It's not specifically mentioned here. But without it, the armor may not be as protective as you'd think. Paul had it in abundance. Jesus Christ had it without measure. King David had it, but didn't always use it. When he did, things went well. When he didn't, things went badly for him and everyone else around him. King Saul, if he had it, he never used it. It cost him the kingdom and his life. So what is that element? Well, in the American Standard Bible, the translation, in Proverbs 1 and verse 2, it says, "To know wisdom and instruction, to discern the words of understanding." Discern, or discernment. More specifically, godly discernment. So in the next few minutes, I'd like to explore, what is discernment? Where does it come from? And how do you get more of it? In the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, on discernment, it says, the first definition, it says, "The quality of being able to grasp and comprehend what is obscure. Skill in discerning. An act of perceiving or discerning something." And the third definition of it, it says, "The ability to see and understand people, things, or situations clearly and intelligently." And this is something that is very much needed to go hand in hand with the armor that Paul was talking about to the Ephesians. From an article written in the United News in 2007, discernment, a vital key to growth. And he talks about here, says that discernment comes at baptism. And that's where this is the godly discernment that I'm speaking of here, not just any particular type. Discernment is good in all aspects of your life. But what I'm particularly talking about here is a godly discernment. Discernment comes at baptism when we receive the Holy Spirit. According to 1 Corinthians 2 and 12, it says, "Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God, which things we also speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teaches, but which the Holy Spirit teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. But the natural man receives not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned." This is something that we have to learn. It's something that they were not necessarily born with, but it's something that we have to learn. Have to learn to be able to read. Sometimes we read between the lines. Discernment can also be, there's other words that could be used for it, intuition or other, that sort of thing. Now, the Greek word is anakrino. It is exercise of discernment, judgment of all things as to their true value. It's like radar that lets nothing in unless it is sifted and sorted by the Word and the Spirit of God. You know, if you went into any church on a Sunday, anywhere in the country, you would like to be hearing words from this book, scriptures quoted from this book. And it wouldn't be very much of a stretch for us to discern that the words that you'd be hearing are not truth. You know, it wouldn't be hard for us to understand it and discern that ourselves. You know, after the death of Mr. Armstrong, there was a change within the church at that time. And many discerned that there was something that was not right, that there was, the laws were being done away with. And little by little at first, you know, changes here and changes there. And many discerned that there's something that's not right. And many of us are here today because of that. We understood that there's something was not right. But many didn't. If you remember, those of you that were here, these curtains in the back of this hall was opened every single Sabbath. And folding chairs set up all the way to the wall. That hasn't happened for almost 17 years now. Because about half didn't discern what was happening in the church and to them. And they're not here. And where they're at, I don't know. Some are most likely keeping Sabbath and holy days in other places. I don't know that. Many, I'm sure, just gave up and quit. I know of many that have just gave up and quit. They didn't discern the times, what was being spoken, even from the pulpit that they were so familiar with for many years. So what can we do, and what should we do? What should we be doing? Ask God and Christ to give you the ability to spiritually discern. In 1 Corinthians 2:14 says, "But the natural man receives not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned." Ask God to help you have your senses exercised to discern both good and evil. It's not just knowing these things, it's putting them into action, putting them into practice. In Matthew 7, in verse 11, it says, "Ask, and you shall be given. Seek, and you shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you." The implication here is ask and keep on asking. Seek and keep on seeking. Knock and keep on knocking. For everyone that asks receives, and he that seeks finds, and to him that knocks it shall be opened. It's an active thing. It's something that's ongoing. You know, for a Christian, lacking godly discernment is like an army that's out on the battlefield, dressed in full battle armor, and not knowing who or where the enemy is. How long could an army stand before they are worn down and overrun? How long can a Christian stand before they are worn down and discouraged? You've got to move forward. Without discernment, you can't move forward. In 2 Timothy 2, verse 12, this is from the New Jerusalem Bible, it says, "If we persevere, then we shall reign with him." The New King James uses the word endure. Endure almost gives the impression of just enduring, just standing still and holding fast. Persevere means you have to be active and moving forward. Matthew 6:18 is a good example of this. In Matthew 6:18, we know this verse very familiar, where Christ is talking to Peter, and he's telling Peter about how he's establishing his church. And he says, "And on this rock I will build my church." And what I want to focus in here on is on the last part of this verse. And it says, "And the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." That's what I want to focus on here. I don't know about most everybody else, but I know that myself, when I've read that before, that the gates of hell shall not prevail, I come to the understanding that if I stood fast with Jesus Christ, immovable, that, you know, the hell and Satan would not overcome me. That's all I needed. But that's not really what it means here. It's not exactly the meaning here, that the gates of hell will not overcome you. The gates in the time that this was written, in the ancient world, the gates were not an offensive weapon, they were a defensive weapon. A defense. The last defense in a lot of things. The cities, walled cities, had gates, and they protected those gates, because if someone broke through those gates, then the city was lost. The gates didn't go out and conquer. The gates were a defense. You know, having discernment in particular godly discernment is a vital tool to our spiritual growth. You know, gates, like I said before, gates are an offensive weapon. Gates are a defensive weapon when it says here that the gates of hell will not prevail, who's on the offensive here? Who is on the defensive? The one that's on the defensive is the grave, is Satan. On the offense is Christ, because the gates of hell will not prevail against God's plan. We read about that in 1 Corinthians 13. But we see here that is not only will the church survive, the church will thrive. This is not a church on the defensive. It says the gates of hell will not prevail against Jesus Christ, that even death will have its end. So I think we need to think more in terms of the fact that we need to be marching forward as soldiers of Jesus Christ, as it describes in Timothy. Christ and the church will prevail over Satan. Every day and in every way, we individually and collectively should be laying siege to the way of life that Satan promotes. It's an active thing. It's an ongoing thing. We should be laying siege to that. We should be putting that on the defensive and God's way marching forward. You know, it's like I mentioned earlier, that an army on a battlefield in full battle array, if they just stand still, they'll be overrun. Can you imagine the Roman army standing still? They didn't. And as a matter of fact, if you go back and you study a little bit about this description of the armor of God, it was designed so that you had to move forward. There was no protection on the back. You couldn't turn around and go the other way. There was no protection from the back. The only protection they had was front, and they had to be moving forward. If they stood still, they would be easily overrun. So we need, as Christians, we need to be moving forward, using discernment, using godly discernment to understand things, to understand the meanings of things. Sometimes you can hear scriptures and you don't quite get it, what it means. There's just something about it that you know is not right until you study into it more. And that's the key too, is study and prayer, and especially fasting, to move forward, you know, as an army, not setting back, not laying back. It says we should be putting that on the defensive and God's way by marching forward, constantly marching forward, not standing still, not moving back.